Yeah, hello, everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. And today is January the 28th, 2021. I have to get used to saying 21, the new year. It's very exciting. And so people on the call, and today we wanted to talk about, I want to welcome you, Val. It's good to talk with you after and hearing what you're doing. So let's see, first I'll just introduce our topic here, and then we'll kind of check in more about how that applies to you. So today I want to talk about imposter syndrome and coaching athletes and how to handle this issue. It's basically anxiety, social anxiety, but it's more it's a newer term that we're hearing these days, and talk about what is imposter syndrome. It also applies to musicians and business people and any performers of any type, and talk about how do athletes and other performers experience this, and what problems does it lead to, how does imposter syndrome affect performance. I know we've all had it in some fashion, probably, and I can tell you what my experience is with that as an athlete, and you can share, we'd love to hear your experiences as an athlete or in other areas of life, too, and as a performing edge coach, you know, you talk about how you can help your athletes to handle, overcome this, and it could be something that I know a lot of you are on social media, so like Val, you're on TikTok, and you could actually address this issue there, and could bring more interest to your social media and to your clients as well. It can bring more clients to you because they realize a lot of people have this, and what can then talk about what athletes, speakers, authors, consultants, anyone, what we can learn from great athletes that encounter, as you encounter imposter syndrome. And I want to talk about a helpful evaluation process that's useful for you. So, I'll just first quickly define what imposter syndrome is, and then we can talk about how you've experienced it and what we can do with that. So basically, imposter syndrome is that internal experience of believing that you're not as competent as others perceive you to be. So you can think of this as relevant to everyone. All of us have some of that self-confidence issue, that's a kind of a narrow definition, but it has links to perfectionism and also social anxiety, too. And so what it really is the experience of feeling like a phony. You know, you feel as though any moment you're going to be found out as a fraud, or it could also be worrying about making mistakes. And, like you don't feel like you don't belong there where you are, and you only got there through maybe luck or maybe because somebody else didn't do as well. So it's, that difficulty of internalizing success, and it can affect anyone no matter what your social status or what your work background or skill level or degree of expertise. And so the term was first used by psychologists in the 1970s, and then when the concept was first introduced, it was thought to just apply to high-achieving women, like us, but since then it's been recognized as more widely experienced. And if things includes things like, some of the signs of self-doubt and inability to realistically assess your confidence and your skills, you think I'm not as good as people think I am, or maybe if you perform well in one, say, basketball game, you might not be able to repeat yourself again, attributing your success to just external factors. Oh, it was a good day, other people did well, so I was able to do well. Or some people, berating your performance, or feeling like there's fear you won't live up to your expectations. Some other signs are like overachieving or being a perfectionist, or sabotaging your own success, saying this is once in a lifetime kind of thing. And so, yeah, setting very challenging goals, maybe too high of goals, and then feeling disappointed when you fall short. So those are some of the signs. I experienced some of those when I was got second in the Hawaii Ironman triathlon, and it was my first race, and I thought, what am I doing here? So, first I just wanted to check in, ask you all if those traits sound familiar, either for your own athletic career that you've experienced or with clients that you work with. So, Val, you're there. You want to share anything that you've noticed in basketball?
Well, I was going to share just like even with now as a coach, I don't know if this is imposter syndrome, but a lot of times I question, well, maybe I didn't achieve enough to be saying what I'm saying. Someone else is probably more qualified to be speaking on this because they have 87 gold medals. Is that imposter syndrome?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Not feeling as qualified as you'd like. And that could be as a coach. Do you mean as a athletic coach for basketball, or do you mean as a performing edge coach with the mental part?
Yeah, a performance edge coach, or if someone say, hey, Val, I want you to speak. Anything like that just has to do with my off-the-court stuff, but me helping other athletes. Even with, like, you know, I'm on social media, sometimes I feel like I feel like a fraud. Like, I struggle with the same stuff I'm talking about. Should I even be talking about it?
Right. Yeah, it is a really big thing, because we think, am I qualified, or do I know enough, or am I going to mess up? So that's really a big issue for, it could be for athletes and for, I'm glad you brought it up for us as coaches too, as speakers, because you think, oh, can I deal with all the different situations that might happen too? I mean, you're, as you've been a professional basketball player, Val, so you're well qualified as an athlete, and it's you wonder, well, can I teach other people how to do this, right? And then when you feel that way, how does that manifest itself, or have you noticed it with how you come across, or are you able to kind of cover that up as you're presenting yourself?
I think I can cover it up, but it does, I think it makes my message not, for me, coming out as confident and as enthusiastic as it should.
Uh-huh. Yeah, in your voice or what you say?
Voice, probably body language as well. I guess I've had imposter syndrome like all my life. I never even heard of it until last year.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard of it at all. So it's intriguing to me.
Yeah, it's intriguing. I think, and it gives us open, because we've all experienced it. I think it gives a whole new avenue to be able to help ourselves and help other people too. I know, and everyone that applies for this program for Performing Edge Coach to be a performance coach has, asked me that same question, how can I do this when I don't feel qualified or don't feel confident enough? So that's, in one way, that's what this whole program is about, is to help you be more prepared and more knowledgeable, and with the knowledge and preparation comes, I think, that confidence over time too. And so that's a good thing. And you're with Val, you're on TikTok, you said, so you're making short videos, is that right? A lot, communicating a lot with videos?
Yes, and they're longer than a minute.
Yeah, they're really short. And so, yeah, with videos, of course, you're if you're just, you know, doing something audio like a podcast, you only have to worry about your voice, and you could be, like, mm-hmm. reading your notes. But if you're on a video, you also have to look good and sound good, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And so how do you do that with your, like, with videos, with lighting and how you dress, how you look? Do you have to think about all those things? Or how do you, I'm just thinking, how do you think about how you present yourself on video?
A lot of times I'll video myself off the app so I can edit my ums and oohs out. So you can video yourself inside the app, inside of TikTok, but I'll video myself outside of the app on my phone so I can edit it better. But, yeah, you have to have good lighting, and you have to be able to, because kids, everyone's attention spans are so short, you have to be able to hook them in the first 2 to 3 seconds. So I know we're getting off subject, but just all those little things go into it, in addition to trying to come off as confident and giving great information.
Yeah, so that's smart. Yeah, to video yourself off, not online first on your phone. And then you can look at it, get feedback, and see how you look, right?
Exactly.
And so you look at yourself and say, do I look like an imposter? Somebody else, you know, kind of judge yourself, right? Or you think, oh, that came across pretty well, and then you look at it, oh, that looks like crap, right?
Yeah, we're always our biggest critics anyway.
Yeah. So that's a good thing to be able to, and you're practicing ahead of time, basically, and if it doesn't look great, you can always do it again, right? Or you can do another take, or you can say, oh, okay, how can I improve on that? And so, yeah, it can be lots of different things you can do. But, yeah, I think video actually is a really good avenue to practice and to improve your confidence. And even with that, you could probably, if you had access, you could share that video just with one other person or something and get feedback and say, yeah, how does this look and that kind of thing, too. It's just a kind of like, you know, the group Toastmasters is a group for speakers. They're all over, you know, international, all over the world. And at first when I started speaking, I thought I was really confident as an athlete, top athlete myself. And but I didn't know, with speaking, I had no clue how to do that and would just, you know, read a bunch of notes. And not know how to present myself at first, and then I got into Toastmasters. That's a really good way to improve with speaking skills, because you're with a group of people and they're watching you and then giving feedback afterward, both positive and negative feedback, and they can comment on the little nervous habits you have. And like someone kept saying, you keep scratching your nose. While I was speaking, I was always scratching my nose, and people had no clue I was doing that. And so it was really important to get that feedback. So over time, able to gain more confidence and realize, you know, when you're giving these short little talks of 5 minutes or so, you can be able to, you know, in that experience of looking around the room and seeing if one person's yawning or not paying attention or giving a sour look, you know, it's easy to personalize that and think, oh, geez, they think I suck, you know. They think I'm not doing that well. I'm boring. People are snoring. But actually, you know, when I check with them afterward, they'd say, oh, I just got off a plane from, you know, another country, or it had nothing to do with me. It was something they were going through. So it can be lots of things. And, of course, with video, you might not get that feedback, immediate feedback from other people watching you. But with, like with TikTok or doing video, you could get, when you post it, you probably get, do you get lots of good feedback, Val, from them?
I do. There are lots of trolls out there, though, like 13-year-old boys. They'll tell you exactly how they feel. So it's mostly positive, but of course I internalize the negative more. You know, that one negative comment.
Yeah, and you're not sure too if they're real people or if they're just these robots kind of thing online. Right?
No, they're real people. They're just like little kids that just like to just go and just be negative.
Yeah,
that's the only thing they like to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that can be difficult. Or how do you handle that with your, in terms of your own self-confidence? Or do you just kind of dismiss them?
Well, it's hard because, like, the whole imposter syndrome comes back. Because when I played in the WNBA, I didn't have the greatest career. And sometimes I'll be saying, you know, have a video on something, and they're like, what are you talking about? You only average 4.8 points. So that, it can feed into my feelings of, do I really belong here? So
right.
And then I'll have someone that says, you know, something totally different. You've made it, you're professional. I want to hear everything you have to say, but I'll internalize that one negative comment. And it'll feed into the whole imposter syndrome thing.
Yeah. It's kind of like a radio, and we can choose what channel we listen to. You can listen to the good feedback, or you can take that one and amplify that too much, or turn up the volume on that, which we need to. That's one of the things I teach clients is how to turn down the volume on the negative ones, right? And be able to turn up the volume on those positive things. Then you can say, oh, that person is just, they've got something going on themselves. This probably is not to do with me. Or you could say they're probably doing that to lots of other videos, lots of other TikTok people too, right?
It makes me sad because that kids think that way. It can be so mean. I'm like, what's going on in your life? It's given me a new perspective for sure. And that's a great analogy, which channel I'm listening to, and, you know, turning up the volume on one and turning down the volume on another.
Yeah. Because it's a lot of, we can, the great thing is what we can do, we can choose what we listen to. I like to think of it as an analogy like a camera. And you know how on an iPhone, when you're taking a picture of something, you can put your finger in the middle and say, okay, here's the subject. If you're taking a picture of a person, you just point there, and the iPhone puts a little yellow box around it and says, focus here. Right? Focus here and make this the foreground, make everything else the background. And so the camera does that so that the person you're taking a picture of is really sharp and focused and everything else is in the background. And exactly what we want to do with our minds, too. We can choose what we focus on. So you can take that, and what you're doing now sounds like is you take that one negative comment, and it's like the camera, you're putting your finger in the middle and say, focus here. But maybe not consciously, but we're saying, focus on this really negative comment, or it gets amplified, and then we repeat it over and over in our mind. So we reinforce that one. But if you can think of it almost like doing something physical and saying, put your finger on the phone and right in the middle and say, focus here, and make a positive comment the focus there and say, okay, make this the focus. I'm going to focus on this positive comment because that's more true for me, and put everything else in the background, then it can help you to put the negative comments in the background so they just kind of fade away and are not prominent at all. So that's one kind of suggestion, how to do that. So, just a suggestion. They think about the phone kind of thing, or the channel, you know, turning up the volume, turning down the volume on things. And repeating is a good thing, too. If someone has a really positive comment, to repeat that 2 or 3 times in your mind and say, here's what this person is saying. And maybe internalize it. If you're saying, Val, you're such a great, I love this video, you know, it's so right on. You can say that to yourself and say, Val, this video is really great. People are really, really thinking this video has great impact on my life. And then saying that 2 or 3 times, that can help you internalize that positive feedback there and make the other one kind of go into the background. Another technique is to just imagine the negative feedback as a ball, like a beach ball, and just, you know, blow it away. Imagine it getting smaller, and then take another deep breath and just blow out the ball further away. So that put all those negative comments in the ball. Now it's smaller like a soccer ball, and then now it's smaller like a basketball, and then smaller, looks like a softball, baseball, and then a golf ball, and then poof, it's gone, or it's just way far away, so that it's not even important. So let me talk more about the imposter syndrome and how it takes. What forms it can come in. So for some people, imposter syndrome can, fuel those feelings to achieve. And this just becomes in the form of kind of a constant anxiety. You might like over-prepare for work or work much harder than necessary to make sure that nobody finds out you're a fraud, that kind of thing. We're always wanting to kind of clean up things. But that can be a vicious cycle where you think that the only reason you survived in, say, a presentation or a video or a talk was that you stayed up all night rehearsing, or you think that the only reason that you got through that, say, the social gathering was that you mentioned, you know, good things about all the guests, so you'll have... you'll be able to say the right things. And the problem with imposter syndrome is that the experience of doing well at something doesn't do anything to change your beliefs. If you have that imposter syndrome, even though you might sail through a performance or have, have a good interaction with people, or let's say you had a good video on TikTok, you know, the thought still might nag in your head, what gives me the right to be here, or am I competent enough to do this? And the more you accomplish, the more you might feel like a fraud. That's what imposter syndrome is. And so I'm just trying to talk about this in terms of working on this for yourself, and then also you can identify it in your clients too. It's as though you can't internalize your experiences of success. And so that makes the terms of, it's kind of like a social anxiety. And so your core beliefs about yourself are so strong that they might not change, even if there's evidence that you are good at this. It takes a while to internalize that. So, you know, we'll talk about how to deal with that later here. And the process is, if you do well, well, it must be the result of luck or because, you know, another person didn't do as well. You know, with competitors, I know worked with one of our performing edge coaches is June in Texas. Hi, June, if you're listening. And she talks about that the riders, she does equestrian work, and so the horse riders feel like in order for me to win, somebody else has to do poorly, or in order for me to do well, there has to be somebody else that messes up. And so as opposed to just doing well on its own merit. And eventually, you can tell your clients, you know, if someone's inquiring about this, you can say that these feelings can worsen your anxiety or might lead to depression if it's untreated. So it's good to have them, you know, say that it's really important to address this now, and that you want to, that's the reason that they should sign up with you to work with you, is that because if they don't work on it now, then it will, can turn into more anxiety or more depression later on, and it can affect other areas of life. It might have started in, let's say, basketball or sports, but then it also affects your social life, your work life, family life, too. So that's why it's good. You can use that as a good reason for people to sign up for coaching with you. And people who experience imposter syndrome also tend to not talk about how they're feeling or struggle in silence. And so that's why it's good to, you know, just be able to allow people to open up for you. So here's some things that you can ask yourself these questions, or your clients ask them these questions to identify the imposter syndrome. You could ask, do you attribute your success to luck or outside factors? Do you agonize over even the smallest mistakes or flaws in your work? I know I have a golf client that does that, and you know, it will hit three great shots, and then when he hits the bad shot, he, you know, lets that dominate. Even a small mistake can just ruin the game for him. And then you can ask, are you very sensitive to even constructive criticism? And ask, do you feel like you'll probably be found out as a phony or as not as confident? And here's a good question, too. Do you downplay your own expertise, even in places where you are generally more skilled than others? So, and I think as women, especially, it applies to women and men, but it's good that we're talking here as women, and we have, of course, male, equal number of men and women coaches on in this program with Performing Edge Coach, but we're all dealing with women athletes, so, and women as, you know, other clients. So it's good to realize that this really affects women a lot more. And so you want to, if you can talk with other, with your women athletes, find out if it's, it's almost kind of, I think we're taught that as girls and as women to not be as confident, or, you know, definitely don't be cocky, or don't let your ego get in the way, or if someone gives you a compliment, it's okay to downplay that kind of thing. And so I think, you know, it's good to tell people if you feel yourself feeling like a fraud or an imposter, it's helpful to talk to a coach like you, and that the negative thinking and self-sabotage, self-doubt, that can often, that characterizes imposter syndrome. It can really affect many areas of your life. And so, and it can come from lots of places, you know, in terms of causes. It can be, more general experience of imposter syndrome. For example, you might have come, you know, the person might have come from a family that highly valued achievement. You know, parents oftentimes are the source of the imposter syndrome, where parents are so demanding and so perfectionistic, and they are, you know, very critical, offering very little praise and more, more being critical. So if you, oftentimes people come from that kind of family background, so you could ask about the family background. And then also another area can be if you're in a new role, like, you know, you get someone who's an athlete who was really a big fish in a small pond in high school, and now all of a sudden they're in college where everybody's a big fish and everyone is the star. Everyone comes from being the best at their high school. That can be something that can trigger imposter syndrome. When you're in your sport, you're doing the sport just as well as you did before, but all of a sudden, you know, you're not treated as well because everyone else is really good too. Val, have you noticed that? Or, I just want to ask if other people on the call have ideas about that also, everyone. And, yeah, Val, are you there? Have you had experience with that? Were you going from being a big fish in a small pond, high school to college, or when you went to being a professional basketball player, was that kind of intimidating?
Yeah, you think of going from so I went from my high school was really small. It was like there were 52 girls in my class, and I'm from a small state. And then I went to a big school like Stanford, and then you think, wait, am I really good enough? You know, I played this small state. You know, it's the competition probably wasn't as good. So those are the things that me personally I thought about when I went from college. I mean, from high school to college. And then the same from college to professionally. Was I only good because my team was good? You know, because my team dominated. So those are some of the things I thought personally.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because your coach is good or the team is good. And you think it's... you just kind of got shoved along, or you know, went along with the crowd, and in a way, that's of course a good thing. We need to be around good people and good coaching to get better ourselves, and it's in a way kind of a balancing act of being able to attribute. Like everything isn't all us, or everything isn't all outside factors, but it's both. And being able to say, okay, you know, I was a product of being able to, of good coaching and a good team, and also, you know, you got chosen, Val, you got chosen to be on that team for a reason. So, you know, you're able to take advantage of that good coaching and that that good support to be able to also, I think it's good to do both, also acknowledge the team and the coaching and acknowledge yourself and your abilities there. So, yeah, I think a lot of times we tend to think it black and white thinking, but it's okay to acknowledge both factors there. And kind of like I was saying, turn up the volume on the personal part that which you were able to gain from that. I think gratitude plays a big part in this too. That you can say I'm grateful for the coaching I had and the team, and also be grateful for your own abilities to be able to take advantage of that. So holding both in your mind is an important thing. So I think it's good to acknowledge with your clients, too, that imposter syndrome and social anxiety oftentimes overlap, So a person with social anxiety disorder may feel as though they don't belong in certain, you know, social or performance situations. So you might be, say, in a conversation with someone or doing a presentation, and you feel like they're going to discover your social incompetence. I've done that even when I've given a talk before, given a speech, and in the middle of the speech, I think, God, am I going to forget what I'm saying, or does this really make sense? Or, you know, you've been doing that internal dialogue as you're talking, which can really get in the way, as opposed to, you know, just being in the situation, being just going with the flow kind of thing. So it's really important to help people to take in some deep breaths and be able to just go with what's happening right at that moment, as opposed to judging that internal dialogue. Imposter syndrome can, you can experience a sense of anxiety when you're in a situation where you feel inadequate. And so some of the types, I want to go over some of the types of people or types of social anxiety that we experience. One is the expert, and that's kind of you and me. All of us as performance coaches, we're experts, you know, at the mental part of training, and we're always trying to learn more. But if you're kind of never satisfied with your level of understanding, in some ways, even though we're highly skilled, can underrate our own expertise. I like to think of it like one analogy that might be helpful is like with running. I'm a runner. Of course, I won San Francisco Marathon and was second in the Hawaii Ironman Triathlon. And those were my areas of athletic expertise. But when I have always been really competitive with other women, and think of, as we're running, I would think of them as, I've got to beat this person or be faster than somebody in order to win or get my best time. But then I thought, it's kind of like a train, an energy train, where all the people in front of me are pulling me along and all the people behind are pushing me. So we're all helping each other to do our best. And it's kind of like that in life, too, right? People in front are pulling, and you know, there's people that are better than us, and they can be our role models. And there's people behind that are coming along, too. And I'm just part of this energy train or a learning train. So if you can think of it that way, then you can still be competitive, but also realize that we're all helping each other to do our best. So that's the way you can think of yourself as an expert, too. And so that's one type of imposter syndrome, is the expert. And then there's the perfectionist. All of us have some of that in us. Perfectionists are never satisfied, always feel like their work could be better. And rather than focusing on strengths, they tend to fixate on any flaws or mistakes. So this often leads to, you know, a lot of self-pressure and high amounts of anxiety. And so perfectionism, you know, as I'm thinking about one client I have that's a golfer, and he's just has to, every swing, everything has to be perfect. And, of course, in golf, it's a game of mistakes, basically. You know, you can hit a few good shots and then mess up. In basketball, same thing. You can hit some, be really on one night. I know Steph Curry is out here with our Warriors in the Bay Area. Can have a really great, be totally off and messed up, and then next game get 40 points or something. It can be up and down. And it's, I guess, an acceptance that we need to teach our clients to, and show that even the great athletes have these ups and downs. It's the people that are resilient and can bounce back and can accept that that we all have flaws. That's what makes us human. And even be able to laugh at yourself and realize, hey, God, I really messed up. But it's okay. I can bounce. The champion athletes are the ones that really bounce back. And these, I'm just wondering, Val, with your experience with basketball, did you have games like that where sometimes you're really on and then sometimes you're off, or you're able to recover okay?
When I got as a professional, I had a hard time because I didn't have a proper mistake ritual. In addition
didn't
to
have what,
a mistake ritual, like how do I flush mistakes when they happen, and I would hold on to stuff. But when I was younger, I definitely would bounce back a lot better when I had down games. Oh, and I have to hang up now. I'm sorry. I have a 10 o'clock appointment I have to get ready for. But this is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot for joining us, Val. And, I'll have the recording up shortly. And,
okay.
We'll have our next call for the second and fourth Thursday of the month. So, yeah, it's great to talk with you. And I'll continue with our discussion here about coping techniques and helpful ones. And then we can maybe do a part two in February. So that'll be great. So thanks so much.
Yeah.
And so that sounds great. Okay, so I just wanted to talk more about coping and how to get past imposter syndrome. You want to start asking yourself some hard questions. They might include things like the following, like what core beliefs do I hold about myself? So that's a good one to ask your clients. And do I believe I'm worthy of getting the credit that I deserve, or do I believe I'm worthy of love that I can get from people? And here's a good question to ask. Must I be perfect for others to approve of me or to recognize me? So those are good things to ask your clients to ask themselves, because you might think that there's some perfect script for conversations and that you can't say anything wrong, or you probably have trouble asking for help from others. So those are some good questions to have your clients ask. And then one thing, so I'll give you a few tips right now to be able for your clients with imposter syndrome to move forward and pass these feelings. And then next time when we get together, the second Thursday in February, I'll go over more tips for dealing with this. And the second Thursday in February will be the the 11th of February, so everybody can put down that time of the 11th, February 11th at 9 a.m. Pacific time to do our next call. So you can, some of the things that you can do, because you might not even realize that you have this imposter syndrome or that you're holding feelings. Some techniques you can use is just to, you know, being able to share your feelings, of course, and ask the clients to share more of their feelings, to talk with you as a coach. And they can realize, you can help them realize that there's a lot of things they might be holding are irrational beliefs. And they can really grow when they're not talked about. So be able to share feelings and then focus on reaching out to others to help others. That can, one of the best ways to get out of yourself and get out of your own anxiety is to reach out and help others do volunteer work or help others in the same situation as you, because you understand what's going on. And if you see someone who seems like they have issues, or they're alone, or they're feeling social anxiety, you know, ask that person a question and bring them into a group. As you practice your skills, you'll build confidence in your own ability. And that's what I started this whole program of Performing Edge Coaching International, is that we can, you know, be able to help everyone here to move past imposter syndrome traits. We all have those to some extent, and be able to move forward and do, be able to be more confident as coaches. So I'm here to help you with that. And if you have questions, you can email me, and we can put those into our next call here. And then I'd say, you know, do a strengths assessment. I talk about that in the book, in Your Performing Edge, and I can send you a questionnaire about that. But assess your own abilities. If you have, you know, beliefs about your maybe incompetent in certain performance situations, you could make a realistic assessment of your abilities to write down your strengths, your accomplishments, and what you are good at. And just instead of comparing yourself with others, just write down your own assessments and perhaps look how far you've come from, say, when you started as a coach, when you started as an athlete. There's always improvement there. Improvement doesn't always come in a straight line. It's all over the place. So sometimes we're up, sometimes we're down. But overall, you probably will notice improvement over time. And another thing is to just take baby steps, to not focus on doing things perfectly, but think just this. I like the phrase just this, and then you fill in the blank. It could be just this video, if you're making a video, just this article, if you're working with an athlete, with my golfer, I say just this shot or just this swing. if it's a basketball player, you know, it could be just this free throw, just this one point, just a shot at the basket. For runners, I can say just this mile, just this step. If it's tennis, maybe just this serve. But focus on one thing at a time, and then take baby steps. And just focus on doing things reasonably well rather than perfectly, and reward yourself for taking that action. So, like, being able to say, you know, I did a good job. It could be, rewards can just come in a simple form of just being able to say good job, or I'm grateful I was able to do that well. So those are some tips I wanted to start with. One other thing I wanted to mention is to to tell your athletes to use social media moderately. And we know that the overuse of social media is related to feelings of inferiority, because people are always comparing. Most people only put the good things or the accomplishments on their social media, and it doesn't give a full picture of what's going on. And so you want to be able to focus on your own accomplishments and not look so much at comparing yourself with others. So now I'll do, next time when we talk on February 11th, on that the second Thursday of February, we'll talk at 9 a.m. Pacific, we'll talk more specifics, dive in more about with imposter syndrome and what you can do about it, and how you can help your clients to be able to get through some of the difficult things, and it really gets some specifics about what works, what doesn't work, and how you can really improve yourself as a coach with, I know we all have some degree of imposter syndrome, so how you can help yourself to move forward and feel more confident at what you're doing. And you know, a lot of it's acting, act as if it's already happening. And as you're acting, you'll begin to get more and more confident and more success with your clients. So thank you so much for attending, and I'll have this replay up shortly on the website. You can go to performingedgecoach.com/schedule. So performingedgecoach/schedule, and there all the replays are. And I'll talk to you next time. So thanks so much. It's really an honor to work with all of you. And I'll talk to you on February 11th when we have our next call as well. If you have suggestions for other topics, you can email me about those. Sounds great. Have a great week. Thank you so much. And have a great time coaching your clients and moving forward with confidence. Thank you now. Bye now.